First case on calendar this morning is 71572. Theodore Falkenberg versus Nicole Falkenberg, if I mispronounce the name, excuse me. Party is ready to proceed. Please come to the podium. If you wish to reserve time, please so state.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Frank Levitt, and I represent the appellant, Ted Falkenberg. Ted respectfully requests that this Court reverse the decision of the District Court and remand this case with instructions for the Court to properly apply Nevada's statutory preference in favor of joint physical custody. Today, the Court is faced with the important question of whether the de facto physical custody guidelines established by Rivera and Bluestein should operate to prevent a child open and easy access to a loving father whose pre-litigation timeshare approached 146 days per year and whose efforts to demonstrate his intent to establish a meaningful relationship with his child were frustrated by the child's mother. This Court should reverse for five reasons. First, under NRS 125C.0015, the Court failed to recognize the parent-child relationship extends equally to every child and every parent, regardless of the marital status of the parents, and that parents have joint physical custody until otherwise ordered by the Court. Second, the Court refused to apply Nevada's statutory preference in favor of joint physical custody where one parent has attempted to demonstrate their intent to establish a relationship with their child, but had their efforts frustrated by the other parent. Third, the District Court improperly applied Nevada's presumption against joint physical custody by solely considering past conditions and arrangements of the parties when it made its determination that Ted, the appellant, could not adequately care for his daughter for at least 146 days per year. Fourth, the District Court abused its discretion under 125C.0035, the best interest factors, by failing to indicate how the specific schedule that was ordered was in the child's best interest and how a reduction in the timeshare to DAC would facilitate the child's best interest. And fifth and finally, Your Honor, the decision wasn't made for appropriate legal reasons. As to the first issue, 125C.0015, and that's the starting point in any custody determination, should be that parents have joint physical custody. Now, in its decision, the Court said, that's not the way that I read the statute. And in talking to Ted's trial counsel, Assemblyman Keith Pickard, he said, I know you drafted the damn thing, but it's not what the statute says. It does say that it applies to all unmarried parents, and all unmarried parents have joint physical custody, but the reality is we have a different situation. Your Honors, this statute on its face applies regardless of the marital status of the parents. And so I'm not sure which statute the Court was referring to when it said that it doesn't apply to unmarried parents, but it clearly does, and it should have applied in this case, and that should have been the starting point of the Court's analysis. The Court's position on this issue didn't come out until trial, but it's clear that its position informed all of its decisions throughout this case. At the preliminary motion hearing, at the motion for reconsideration, all of the hearings in this case, the Court started out the wrong proposition, the wrong legal proposition, and awarded the respondent primary physical custody. Now, I would submit to the Court that this de facto timeshare that the Court based its decision on is that AB 263 and this statute were meant to prevent this kind of situation where the Court comes in, gives one party primary physical custody, and empowers litigation. Now, when you go into family court, we know that there's a preliminary motion proceeding, and in just about every other courtroom, just off the top of my head, Denise Gentile, Judge Rebecca Burton, Cheryl Moss, these judges are awarding joint physical custody, absent some compelling circumstance or where the child's best interests clearly dictate otherwise. And so for the Court to essentially do the reverse in this case, you're encouraging litigation. If the court would have, and this is...
You're also incentivizing kind of bad conduct, right? I mean, if you're going to project that the existing 138 days or whatever it was is not enough, and therefore you're going to build the entire future of that child on the past pre-order conduct, where are we? I mean...
Absolutely, Your Honor, and that's a great point, and that's one of the policy reasons why we should not look solely at de facto arrangements, because you're encouraging bad conduct, and you're encouraging parents to withhold their children so that they can establish this de facto timeshare. Now, we know that in Bluestein, the court said that the...
Is there a legislative history indication that the statutes were intended to undermine or undercut Bluestein and McGill?
There's nothing that I found in the legislative history that specifically says that it's going to undercut Bluestein or undercut Rivera. I believe when these statutes were first introduced, there was going to be a presumption in favor of joint physical custody, but that's not ultimately what the legislature decided. However, the court needs to clear this area up, because we have Bluestein that says, okay, we have Rivera first, and that's in the context of characterizing a physical custody arrangement. That's not an initial determination. Right. Then we have Bluestein, and it's a similar situation, and I believe it was Justice Douglas that authored that opinion, and he said that this is going to be a tool that we're going to use to determine a child's best interest, but it should not abrogate the paramount consideration, which is the child's best interest.
Counselor, in this case, and you're aware of the record in this case, but my understanding was prior to Mr. Falkenberg coming back to Nevada, he had been posted for work purposes out of state for a long period of time. As you began your statements talking about we're looking to the future, the relationship, what was offered in terms of what he intended to do in the child's best interest in the future as to this request that was before the court?
So when the court at the initial hearing, at that time, Ted was still working out of state. He was living in Nevada, but working out of state. He would go to North Dakota for 2 weeks, and he would be back in Nevada for 7 days. Now, at the time of trial, he had already moved back. I believe that it's not necessarily moved back, but that he had changed jobs and was now working full-time in Nevada. And that was, I believe, in August 2015. And at trial, Ted testified that, I want to care for my daughter half the time.
And at that point, the child was, what, 13 months old?
Between 1 and 2 years old. Yes, Your Honor. And so he testified, I want to spend as much time as I can with my daughter. My work schedule is different than the respondent's, and I can pick her up and spend time with her. And the great example of the problem with the court's order is that in Rivera, the court...
Let me bring you back.
Okay.
You're making legal arguments, but they need to have, for the court... You're asking us to set aside a decision that the trial court made. I need to understand the factual nature of the record, what was offered to show that the presumption, as you talked about, this equal presumption you're starting with, the court was either appropriate or inappropriate doing what they did. So talk about what Dad offered to show that it was in the best interest of the child to do this, based on previously the agreement between the parents that Dad was going to work out of state majority of the time, except for, I guess, some holidays, contribute financially because of the age of the child, leave with mother. That's changed. So what did he say so we understand why the court erred?
And what happened, and I believe I know what you're getting at, Your Honor, what happened is that there was a circumstantial change. Now, he permanently got a job in Nevada, to work in Nevada. And when the court made its initial determination and when there was this de facto arrangement, the parties were married. And they had made this decision together that Ted would be working out of state to bring in more money, and when the child turned about 1 year old, he would try to get permanent employment back in Nevada. And so The circumstances had changed, Your Honor.
Okay, and so what was the showing of the changed circumstance? I think that's Justice Douglas's question. What did the data show the court about his current living situation and his ability to care for the child with joint custody to be awarded?
That he had moved back to Nevada, not officially moved back, but he was permanently in Nevada, right. No longer working out of state. That's the first thing. And the second thing is that he testified that he had a desire to spend as much time with his daughter as possible. And I believe that that's all the statute requires. You know, you have this statement in the law that says there's a preference for joint physical custody where one party has attempted to demonstrate their intent to establish a meaningful relationship with the child. Now that doesn't require a showing of a demonstration of a meaningful relationship. It just simply requires an intent, demonstrating your intent to establish a meaningful relationship with the child. And what that means, what I believe that means, is that that's discouraging parents from withholding, and that's also the legislature saying, if we have a parent that wants to be involved in their child's life, and that's what he testified to.
Counselor, the only minimal issue of withholding, at least the record we have in front of us, was father asking for, I guess, a week extension or whatever in terms of child visitation. Mom denied it. He got one day instead. Mm-hmm. But again, we're looking at the presumption and we're looking at the child's best interests and trying to deal with the balancing act that we have to because of the statutory nature. So we're back to what do we have in our record?
That is the only evidence of withholding in the record, but that is really, over the 6-month period that this case was going on, that is the only evidence that the court had to weigh on that specific factor. And there was evidence that Ted presented that he had asked the respondent for a week with the child, and that he was off work for the week, he wanted to spend the whole week with his daughter. And instead of giving him the whole week, she gave him a single day, and instead took the child to daycare on all of the remaining days. And we even have Judge Potter at page 509 of the record saying, you pick up the child as soon as you can from daycare. So then for him to order a schedule that doesn't minimize the child's time in daycare, it just seems inconsistent and nonsensical. We have all of these other factors. Which parent is more likely to facilitate a relationship with the other child? This factor weighed in Ted's favor. The only evidence we had was that circumstance, and it weighed in Ted's favor. There was also evidence presented that when Ted had the child, that he would take the child and spend time with respondent's family, respondent's mother, respondent's father, respondent's sister. Now, this evidence bears on who is more likely to facilitate a relationship with the other party. The court also made findings that the respondent's paranoia and mistrustfulness of the appellant was preventing the party's prospective ability to co-parent, and then admonished the respondent and said that you're going to lose custody if you keep doing this, but then rewarded her with primary physical custody.
There's some issue on both sides of this that mom was battling drug addiction demons and dad rode on a motorcycle with the child. Could you comment on what the court's findings with respect to that back and forth?
As far as the drug issues, the court made a finding that respondent was in a methadone program, but that there was no testimony that this interfered with her ability to parent the child. In fact, if you look at page 72 of the record, you see a positive drug test for methamphetamine 1 month before the initial motion hearing. So she tests positive for meth. And then we go into court a month later, and the judge says, okay, well, she's watched the child most of the time, so we're going to give her primary physical custody.
What about dad and the motorcycle, and what did the judge do with that?
The findings on that, the judge was not impressed with the motorcycle. He said, okay, this is up to you, Ted, if you want to do this, but you need to be safe about this. I think that it wasn't appropriate, but I'm not going to make a finding that this was, you know, very, very improper. I see I have about a minute left. I'd like to reserve it for rebuttal if I may.
Thank you. On behalf of Nicole.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Wendy Kinzel, on behalf of the respondent.
Nicole Falkenberg. I'd like to address a couple of things that the appellant has brought up. First of all, when someone is in a methadone program, they must show positive for methadone because how it works is it's a tapered down effect.
What was she? Is she addicted to heroin or what?
No.
How did she get into methadone program?
Well, what this is that she was on pain medication. She had a lot of problems with her back.
Yeah.
And they gave her pain medication, and that was a prescription. So what happened is that to get off of that, they put him in a clinic, in a program. It's an outpatient program. You have to go every day. They do random drug testing. And so how the methadone program, and that's what they use when you're trying to come off of those kinds of prescription narcotics. It's just how they do it. You must test positive, because otherwise you're not compliant. So what they do is they look at the dose that they give her at every single, not every week, but every so often, they start going down and until you're finally off of it. So you have to have a certain level in your system. What that proves is you're not using any other illicit drugs or even prescription drugs.
Well, what about the methamphetamine?
Well, what happens is it comes, if you look at the whole file, there was a letter in there, in the exhibit, that describe exactly how the process works.
The methamphetamines.
Well, it's methadone. It's part of it, and that's how it shows.
Methamphetamine's a stimulant. Methadone's an opiate.
Right. It's methadone, and that's how when they do the program, and if you see all the drug tests and the letter that was from the clinic, it said that she's in compliance because on the step down program, when they take the drug test, it has to be at a certain level. So the level of medication they're giving her will correspond to the drug test that they did, and it has to match. If it's above it, that means that she's using drugs that are not part of the program. But it never was. And so she kept going down in dose, and she finally was done.
Methamphetamine is not methadone. She's showing methamphetamine.
Right. It's how it is in the bloodstream, okay. And that's the test that they use for methadone.
Let's move away from that point. I'm concerned on this case with respect to the district judge's reason for deeming the record sufficient to overcome the presumption of joint physical custody in favor of an award of primary custody, because the main reason that I see articulated is just this one-year-old child had spent more time with its mother on a daily calendar count than with its father. And despite the father's time in Nebraska oil fields, he did seem to be spending considerable time with the child historically. And I don't understand the district court's reasoning for granting primary physical custody based on the findings we have. So if you address that, that would be helpful.
Absolutely. So when he was in the oil fields and he came back for about 5 days, I think it was like every 2 weeks or something, what the court found that there was no evidence presented by the appellant to show that he actually cared for the child, did anything other than coming home and you know, doing what he needs to do just to get ready to go out again. So the history of the parties were that the primary caregiver was the respondent, and she had always done everything, and he left that to her. So the court looked at it going forward, and the court said, you know, quote unquote, Ted has no history and merely comes in today asserting that he could take half the time and it's in the child's best interest to modify the relationship the parents established with the child and each other in awarding joint physical custody. He never
addressed the child when that statement was made.
I believe the child at that point in time, that statement was made at trial. Okay, that was that was one of the reasonings.
The child was like 14 months old.
About that, and at that point in time, but he never showed or took any other initiative. So he didn't.
When he and the mother were married.
From the beginning, they were married previous to having a child.
And then they stayed together for how long after the child was born? 6 months, by my record.
I'm not exactly sure of the exact dates of when they decided to separate, but that sounds about right, around that time frame. And part of the reason why the separation happened is because the respondent was a single mom. You know, he wasn't around, he wasn't helping out. And that was clearly something that the judge saw in all the testimony.
There was nothing in the record that indicated he wasn't providing for the child.
Well, he was providing some financial support, but he wasn't taking care of the child
on
his own.
That's one of the predicaments right now that people are in. If they want to be paid, sometimes they have to leave the jurisdiction to work.
That's
so you're
yes,
unnecessarily penalizing for someone who it would appear was attempting to do the right thing.
And I understand that, Your Honor, but he wasn't when he was home, when he spent time home, and even when we started to go into the litigation.
Which brings us to the point when he was home and asked for an extension of time to see the child. He was told no, that he could only have one day. How does that work in this?
And how that worked, Your Honor, was this, is that she did, then the court did say, yes, she gave him a day, and she's always given him more days. That's not part of this record right now. But he
also can't argue it.
That's why so
I understand that.
That's why
I
was asking for clarification of the, what
yes.
is in the record.
Yes. And so she never withheld the child. And as far as he had daycare that he would put the child in at his home. So whether he was spending time with the child or not, you know, that's the thing to be determined. Because when you have, when
counsel,
he was,
except for someone who is well healed or somebody is supporting them, the ability to stay at home with the child 24/7 is just unreal.
I agree, Your Honor. I agree.
Parents in many cases have to work. Mom, their mother or their father, the grandparents or siblings or babysitters do take care of children during a period of time. That doesn't show they don't care. That's just the reality of what they're doing.
Oh, I absolutely agree, Your Honor. But the difference between daycare at one place versus another, you know, how does that spend more time with the child? And further, Your Honor, I want to talk about as well, it's part of the record as well, is that when it came to at the divorce, and as far as taking the minor child to daycare or school, however you want to say it, is that my client was taking the child on Monday mornings, had to get up very early, go to the other side of town to bring the child to daycare. And when we went back to court on this, the appellant didn't want to take her, go up in the morning and take her. So what happened was on Sunday, the previous day before Monday, the respondent would pick up the child. So if he really wanted more time with the child, just take her to daycare on Monday if you're really saying you want more time. That shows that he wasn't willing to go the extra mile to spend more time with the minor child.
And let me, we have law that says joint physical custody is presumed court from order otherwise, but
yes.
There needs to be an articulated reason for doing so that passes legal muster.
Yes, sir.
I've read this order. It says Ted's time availability, and the child's 14 months old at the time of trial.
Yes, sir.
Ted's time availability approached 140 days, but never exceeded 146 days.
Correct.
The order seems to say that the reason it's granting primary physical is the party's pre-existing arrangement with respect to this child. So we have a situation where we have a legal presumption, and we have a de facto arrangement where Ted approached 146 but didn't quite make it, and we have testimony that one time he wanted for a week and he only got one day. Normally that would be sort of a de minimis thing, but this child is so young. And on this record, as Justice Douglas says, people have to work. The man was going out 2 weeks and then coming back to Nevada, trying to see the child, and managed to put together 140 days in the preceding year. I am really struggling to see an articulated basis in this order that would support anything other than joint physical custody. So if you can help me out with that.
Certainly, Your Honor. So there are other factors. When Judge Potter went through all the factors, and one of the things he said under 125C00354, so Part D, is that there's an unusually high level of conflict between the parties. And he felt that that would make a joint custody situation less tenable. That was one of the things that he talked about on that. And then he also looked at the fact with the deferring of the prudential duties to the respondent. Also, he talked about the fact, when we talked about the motorcycle and the razor and the fact that he didn't have a car seat. This is one of these four-wheel drive, like these like open quads, I guess. I'm not really versed on that, but I know that I saw a picture. It's an open, it's like a big wheels. And
like an ATV.
Like an ATV, but I guess it might be different. And he had the minor child in there without a car seat. That goes to whether or not he's really thinking about a very small child and what could happen to her. There also, as part of the record, is they have this little motorcycle, I don't know exactly what you call it, a little mini bike. And the appellant was on it, and he had the minor child. He had one hand on the bike, and the other hand around his daughter. And this is a really young child. She probably was about a year old at that point in time, or maybe less. And that goes to his judgment. I mean, you know, why would you do that? Because the child could fall off, and this could be a very tragic end for a minor child. So that is also part of when you look at, you know, the best interest of the child as well. Now, you know, the judge did say in the lower court that he talked about that because he said, you know, he's asking for joint physical custody, and quote unquote, the court said that he cautioned Ted not to be the guy who convinces the court that the court was right by making a bad decision that cost their daughter pain and suffering. And that's an issue as well. And so when you take all the factors into this, it was in the best interest of the child that the respondent would be the primary caregiver. And
should the court be concerned with the court's interpretation because the court stated on the open record that they didn't understand what the legislature meant by meaningful relationship?
You know, I think at the point in time when the AB 263 came out,
Talking specific. We have a judge who's sitting there and says, I don't understand this. I don't know what they meant. Did either counsel attempt to persuade him this is what it meant or did not mean?
I don't think either party, because at that point in time is when he was going through his ruling. And to my recollection, nobody had said or objected to what he was saying about that. I think the judge was trying to express how he's coming to his decision. And here you have a very young child.
It's something that's of great concern to have the person who was making the ruling saying they don't understand the law, but yet they're going to make a ruling based upon the law. These are words in one of our sections that he had to consider.
And Your Honor, I believe that Judge Potter was taking what he thought that meaningful relationship or best interest would be when he was going through in very detail all the rulings that he was making.
If he had his view of meaningful relationship, what he's saying is the person who has the child at the time the parties split up with an infant will keep that child because historically the person will have assembled enough days for the count. That can't be what that statute means by intent to have a meaningful relationship.
No, and I don't think that's what the judgment either in it. I don't think it was just, it was part, if you look at, you know, at the as far as when you go to 125C0035, and you also look at NRS 125-0031A, these are just factors. So it doesn't, you know, Judge Potter didn't say, okay, this is the only factor. He went through all the other factors, and when certain factors didn't apply because the child's so young, he stated that. And he clearly and concisely...
So how does somebody want to come show changed circumstances to regain the joint physical? What would they be able to show against this order of change that justified joint physical?
I'm asking your exact question.
One of the reasons for requiring findings that make sense for the custody arrangement order is, in the future, when the people come back and say something's happened, it's changed, you should change your order, is the original order sets the coordinates for the analysis, so you understand what was the basis for the original order. Here, if you wanted to come back and say, things have changed and I want joint physical, what could a person show have changed meaningfully?
He would show exactly what has transpired since that date.
But what the order would have specified primary physical, and as I read this order, the main reason for the way it was structured was the dad didn't have 146 days.
Well,
he couldn't get it if the mother had joint physical.
But there is more to that than just that. That's not the only deciding factor.
Counsel, I'm going to stop you right here. Yeah. Give us your concluding statement very shortly because you're over time now.
Okay. Your Honor, based on Wallace v. Wallace, Ellis versus Carucci, the court has to look at, in changing a custody decision, was there clear abuse of discretion? And in this case, there wasn't. With all the evidence that was presented at trial, I believe the judge has made the correct ruling, and we ask that you affirm the lower court's decision.
Thank you. Rebuttal? Counsel, you've got about a minute and 2 seconds, so get to it.
I'll be quick. Thank you, Your Honors. The question that Justice Pickering just asked illustrates the precise problem with this, is that the fact that Ted didn't move back, but was permanently working in Nevada, that fact would be barred by McMonigal under a change in circumstances analysis. And so Judge Potter didn't consider it. He comes in and he wants a change of custody. Well, I'm not going to consider that you're now working in Nevada permanently. And that illustrates the problem with this decision. And although, with all due respect to opposing counsel, she tried to skirt around this, methamphetamine and methadone are two different things. And there are positive results for both of those at page 72 of the record. On page 71 of the record, you see the letter she was talking about from the Center for Behavioral Health. It says that she was compliant with her program by remaining abstinent from illicit opiate use. It didn't mention the methamphetamine, which is why this evidence really, came into question. Your Honors, I see that I'm out of time. May I briefly conclude?
Your time is up.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, parties, for their arguments today. Attempts to clarify the record for the court so we can make a decision on this matter.